On another court, George Jeffreys woke up in Mount Druitt in Claire's mother's pretty house, babysitting and shining Claire's shoes with oxblood polish, a blue-based crimson on tower heels. Barack Obama was on the TV, studiously non-obsessive, an expression of nonchalance George had last seen on a water buffalo about to charge, its eyes urbanely on anything but its target. George's charge was the tiny French daughter of Claire's friend Sophie. Claire had come back to Mount Druitt to find her own mother, gone missing but since returned, a short rather than the long meander, which seemed to have provoked a good reunion. Obama's rage was against the Supreme Court's lifting restrictions on campaign finance. George felt himself beyond non-tactical anger, but that Obama might have tried a harker before about Gaza. Florence, the French baby, crawled upright, holding George's hand, which, if he moved it to help her, caused her to squat in a rage, half harker, half can-can, so he was a statue in one arm, used the other to incarnadine Claire's shoes a little more. He thought, the year of the ox is almost over, planned to ask the women to Chinatown, wondered what Florence would make of the fireworks, she such a delicate, powerful porcelain dragon. You could see where Beauvoir Clicquot came from. Then Claire in his head snapped patronising, like a silvery superego, and he laughed. Florence was named after Florence Obinar, the journalist from Liberation who was held hostage in Iraq, then released. Sophie wanted the baby to be elegant, professional, and foremost a survivor. Claire called the baby Florence Aubergine to the baby's giggles, but if George had dared joke, the baby's glance would have shrunk him to ice. He really thought the baby more Florence Nightingale, neat, emotional, mighty, with an oxen perseverance and a great pleasure in the suddenness of birds. Florence Nightingale woke up in her small Scutari room, still mercifully tearful after meeting her dead pet owl Athena on a nearby cliff last night. Athena had returned and stayed enough to give her heart for the struggle at the hospital, then left. Florence wrote about it matter-of-factly to her family. All is a matter-of-fact on top the existential cliff, facts inexorable and comforting as ploughing oxen with their bird-straight, night-eyed reliability. George Jeffreys used his free right polishing hand on the remote, saw that Chemical Ali had been hanged in Iraq for gassing Kurds, and that Sky by coincidence was featuring birth defects caused by chemicals the US used in Fallujah. He recognised the firework flare of active uranium, the same brilliance he had seen from the outskirts of Gaza. The Sky program was called The Baby Doctor, a quite brilliant focus of human interest on the shabby continuity in war crimes. Florence the baby made it to the couch arm, gave herself an uppercut on it and fell down screaming. George was allowed to comfort her in a hug this time. This comforted George from the echoes of screaming babies. As an ox, I'm alert to the point of twitching, but still trample through the difficult. One difficult thing was reading Dot Porter's poetry after her death at a tribute, also seeing her father, grey, quiet, aloof with grief. As an ox, I use a small hardcover to lean on, write at first all first drafts longhand on paper. Currently, my leaning book is Chester Porter QC's The Conviction of the Innocent, How the Law Can Let Us Down, which seems in the remedying spirit of ox work. As I sat at the reading, also grey, quiet, and perhaps seeming aloof with grief, I looked up and Dot's father unexpectedly grinned at me with Dot's quick, huge let's get through it grin. My daughter the tiger, when I told her, said he must have been channeling Dot. Perhaps that second he had Dot's face. His book has Blake's Lear and Cordelia in prison on its dust cover, Lear tranquil with exhaustion, his daughter guarding over him, sitting as tranquil as a sentry tiger, head on powerful curved fist. The year of the ox is never over. What tiger would you guard if the furrows filled with mud, not rice and water? Mud scatters beside me and my hooves slip under me often, and always then my heart, like an ancient engine, coughs in terror, but the muddy ditch holds, live with rice and water.